Welcome to a posher tournament in a tea break from the wonderful Love Sport officers. I'm Roz Sattar, and I'm joined, as always, by Anna Smith.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Our Fed Cup doubles player extraordinaire, and hopefully will never see me play tennis ever after my comeback.
I most definitely will. We're going to be arranging that hit very soon.
While we're talking about hits, they keep on coming. Of course, it's the US Open, and it's just gotten underway. We're on the second day. They've been a bit delayed with rain. They've got one roof. We've got two. We're not bragging or anything.
Is it only one?
Yeah.
I thought one of them got covered as well. Louis Armstrong get covered?
I think so. They might have. I think if Pliskova was playing on there, they started her on there as I was coming in. But by all accounts from colleagues out in the States, it's going to be a very long day today. It's stop and start rain all day, so it could be quite trying.
I feel like it's Wimbledon all over again. But at least they've got the biggest stadium in the world with Arthur Ashe, so they're going to get a lot of spectators who can come in and watch. So that should be one benefit at least.
Except their first match was Nishikori.
Oh.
Quite, yeah. My thoughts entirely. But before we get onto that, let's go on to another Japanese player. Naomi Osaka, of course, started her campaign yesterday. Bit of a faltering campaign as well. She found herself very swiftly down, came back, then found herself, you know, losing the second set and had to scrap for the win. First round nerves.
Well, I think I read an interview and she said she was so nervous. She hadn't experienced anything like it. So I guess all the emotions that she had from last year probably came flooding back. And, you know, it must be quite stressful. She comes back first time trying to defend a slam. It's, you know, it's a big thing for her. And she obviously hasn't probably got the best form leading into this. So it's going to be stressful. And, you know, she's going to want to do well here. But, it was a great thing for her that she managed to get through. And I think it probably is only going to do her good for the rest of the tournament.
I mean, it's interesting that you say stressful. Prior to that, the biggest title that she'd had to try and defend, of course, was Indian Wells, which is plenty big enough. They like to call themselves the fifth slam. But she's had a rocky time. You know, it's almost like she loves the playing tennis. She hates being in Europe, so on behalf of our continent, we apologise. But, you know, it's just been really up and down from her. I'm glad that she backed up the chaos of last year with the Australian Open win, but even then she seemed to be a little stressed out in the final. I just feel that we're going to have a bumpy ride with her for the remaining six or so matches.
I think that's just her in general, isn't it? She's very emotional and you can kind of see everything's written on her face. And, you know, she said earlier in the season that she really struggled with enjoying the game and she just kind of fell out of love with it a little bit. So you can kind of hope that she's rekindled that love for it and just enjoying being back out there. And if anywhere is going to make her enjoy it, it's going to be Arthur Ashe Stadium again and being defending champion. And if that doesn't sort of make you love the game, then I'm not really sure what is going to. But I think she's really happy to get through that one yesterday and it's probably going to give her a good foothold in the tournament, we're hoping.
Talking of another one that's probably fortunate to get through, and another favourite in many people's books to win was Ash Barty. I mean, her first set left me baffled. 1-6. It was like, you know, it's like she'd forgotten how to tennis. I mean, obviously normal service was resumed, but I mean, Barty's like the anti-Osaka. Nothing seems to faze her, and even if she doesn't, she's all Hakuna Matata, the sun will rise tomorrow. You know, it just seems that she has that pragmatism that maybe stepping away from the game gave her. And you wonder whether that's something that Osaka will consider at some stage if she can't regain or rekindle her love for it.
But how do you get that, though? That's the thing. I'm not sure Osaka and Ash have the kind of same personality. I think if you take away Naomi's personality and her emotions, I don't know whether you have the same person who expresses themselves on the court like she does. And then if you kind of gave Ash Naomi's, it's, you know, would it take away from both of their games? And I just can't see Naomi. I think to some extent when she grows up and gets older and things like that, she will start to control her emotions a little bit better. But she's had so much happen to her in the last year, you know, kind of from Indian Wells to suddenly winning the US Open kind of out of nowhere. And then all of a sudden the Australian Open, she's suddenly become a superstar overnight. And it's a lot to deal with at such a young age. And especially for someone who doesn't like the spotlight. I remember I was in, I think it was a couple of years ago, we were playing in Tokyo and she had to do the speech. I have never in my life seen anyone more awkward doing a speech in all my life. I literally wanted to get up there and help her. It was so cringe. And having to do that week in, week out, day in, day out, in front of millions and millions of people, I think it's just kind of her getting used to it and acclimatizing to the level of fame that she's got and the expectation now. She's not an underdog anymore. She's the one who's going to be gunned for it week in, week out. And that's hard to deal with. And it's a very big change of mentality. So I think she has done well. It's just still, you know, acclimatizing to that role that she has now.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether it'll be a double-edged sword that she regained the world number one coming in, because it's quite nice to have the two defending champions at the top of the tree. But, you know, pressure can do funny things. But anyway, she is safely through. But there has been a fair degree of carnage in the women's side.
Shock horror.
I know that it's quite a surprise, but I think the two notables for me, I mean, both have had like iffy years. Two former champions, Sloane Stephens and Angelique Kerber, stand out as, you know, high-seeded exits. I'm not necessarily sure we'd call them a shock, but, you know, you'd expect better from champions, but they both had horrific years.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a little bit synonymous with Sloane, how up and down she is. You always think that when it kind of gets to these big events, so she's going to be able to turn it on, but just really just couldn't find her game yesterday and really struggled. But Angie just seems to really be struggling and just not really sure where to go. She looks a bit lost at the moment and she kind of needs to find a little bit of direction and get back to what made her world number one and Wimbledon champion. So I don't know what it is she needs, you know. Obviously, I don't know,
a new coach.
Yeah, but I think someone asked her about whether she'd have Torben back, and obviously he's working with Donna Vekic and it's going very well, so he's obviously not going to want to move. Donna's not going to want to lose him. So, you know, it's trying to find someone who's got a little bit of fresh impetus, can give her that hunger back. And the thing with her is that, you know, if she's 1% off, she doesn't have as many weapons as someone like a Serena or someone like that, where they can sort of bludgeon their way through. You know, if she's not in peak physical condition where she's moving incredibly well and hitting the ball like she can, you know, she's going to struggle, because at the end of the day, she's just a kind of counterpuncher. And if she's that 1 second slow, it's going to make a massive difference to her game. It just seems a little bit that's kind of what's happening at the moment.
Oh, it was baffling, because obviously Mladenovic had a back issue. Kerber steamrolled in the second set, and then whatever painkillers they'd given Mladenovic, they kicked in, and her fighting spirit as well. And you know, all of a sudden, and it was gone in an instant, because I thought Kerber looked home and dry. And you're right, she seems to, what she reminds me of is Joe, when Joe had that slump year where she would start fast and then suddenly lose her way and have no idea what to do. She's kind of lost that sense of winning ugly, you know, just getting the win no matter what. I don't know what will fix it.
No, I'm not sure either, but that was something she almost kind of prided herself on, the fact that she could win ugly. You know, she wasn't gonna let anyone get past her. You know, she'd make that last ball. And I think it was when she played Serena in that final, she was just literally balls that would have gone for winners, she was getting back like no one else could. And it just seems that she, like you said, she has lost it that little bit. And it's just, I don't know whether it's a physical thing, a mental thing, a combination of the two, but it just seems that there's something that's just not quite there. And it's the hardest part, is trying to pinpoint what it is and what's going to make the difference, because she's not the type of person who doesn't work hard. But if you're working hard on the wrong thing, you're not going to get it back. So I don't know what the answer is for her. But yeah, I think she needs a coach and just a little bit of direction.
On the subject of Serena, the match that everybody thought was going to be the popcorn match, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to hold my hands up here. I did think it was going to be a lot tighter than it was, for two reasons. One, because they're both a lot older, certainly you'd hope a lot wiser. And also they've been through so many injuries. I just thought it would be a war of attrition and whoever was the fitter would come out. But I was astounded I had to giggle at Serena's game face at the photo, this poor kid beaming with smiles at being on the court with two legends. Serena was just deadpan, completely, it's on. And as soon as she got that first break, I thought, right, well, I'll get an early night's sleep then. What were your thoughts?
I wasn't shocked, to be honest, the fact that it was a bit of a one-sided contest. I think it's just the fact that there obviously is no love lost between the two of them, so the fact that she found out she was playing Maria first up, you know, night session on Ash, I think it couldn't have almost been a better draw for her. You know, she said, I read something where she said that as soon as she found out, she just upped that level of intensity in her practice because she knew she had to be on it, and it really showed. And that's the thing, is when Serena turns it on, no one gets close to her. And that's what she showed. It's just a case of she's going to have to bring that to every single match, not just when she's playing Sharapova first round. That's the thing. But I mean, I wasn't shocked by the result at all. I thought maybe it would have been a little closer, but I mean, Sharapova's had a shambolic year so far, and
yeah,
there wasn't really much she could do to hurt her.
No, I mean, what got me was Serena's level of returning. I mean, everybody talks about Serena's serve, but I think people don't give enough credit to the fact that she's also one of the best returners in the game. And she just shut Sharapova down. There was nothing that anything coming over that net would do. What do you reckon?
But Sharapova has always had a little bit of a shaky serve, hasn't she? She's always had kind of problems with that second serve, with shoulder injury. She's sort of always gone for two big first serves, essentially. And I think it probably plays into her hands a little bit. She can just use that pace, and she's so compact on those returns, and she just uses the pace off that Sharapova serve, and it, you know, it's not a weapon as it used to be. And yeah, like you said, I think her returning game is probably a little bit underrated, but she literally just sits on that baseline and just slaps those returns, and when she connects with them and she's feeling it, there is literally nothing you can do.
So on to the men then. We've had a few surprises. We've lost two of the young guns that many people think are the princes in waiting, if you like, Dominic Thiem and Tsitsipas, who went through... Tsitsipas's match was like a full-on Greek tragedy. It was marvellous, but not for any reasons that were good. But again, you know, I mean, we've said before that you can't really see past the big three, and this just proves it. What do they need to do to have that kind of impact on a slam?
They just need that consistency. I think it, you know, it's all well and good, you know, team having a run to the final of the French Open, but if you can't back it up week in, week out, it's irrelevant. And that's the thing, I think all of these young guns, I'm not really sure how team can still classify as a young gun, to be honest. But
I think anybody under the age of 30 at the moment.
Well,
probably,
yeah,
counts.
If you look at Rafa, Roger and Novak, I guess so. But, you know, I think it is that consistency, and I think we're blessed with the generation that we live in to see them literally performing at their highest level pretty much week in, week out. It's very, very rare that you don't see them sort of at 90% or above. We obviously saw it with Roger when he lost to Rublev, but then, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes on and wins the US Open. It's kind of, it's irrelevant for him, that loss. And then, I don't know, but you just can't look past them. They just looked, I mean, Rafa and Novak especially just looked pretty clinical. And Roger obviously had that slip up in the first set, but then he's had that a couple of times, hasn't he, at the US Open, where he seems to just have a dodgy first set, but then he manages to pull through and then sort of railroads the rest of the draw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to put it down to rust, because, you know, we've seen with Rublev taking out Tsitsipas that to lose to Rublev isn't a surprise, because at the moment the Russian players are just in a massive resurgence at the moment. But yeah, this rustiness of his, I mean, I suppose you could want to cut him a bit of slack. He is 38 after all, but there's nobody better, I think, though, that plays himself into form. What I tend to find is that Nadal is great with people that he's supposed to wipe the floor with, but once he gets in deep into the second week and he gets like the top 10, top five, that's where you're going to see a loss. And it's not a shock loss, because there probably isn't much of a disgrace to lose to somebody in the top five. Whereas Roger and Serena, for that matter, when we're talking, they seem to have been expert in building up form. You know, you have to win seven matches in 2 weeks, and they've been expert in playing themselves into form. What's the mentality behind that?
If I knew the answer to that, I think I'd be a millionaire or a Grand Slam champion. So I'm not 100% sure. But I mean, you kind of look at Rafa and the way he was so clinical. I think for him, the most important thing is just getting through quickly, in terms of just making sure that the body's in good shape. But the way he just goes through opponents, it's just phenomenal. And, you know, he was just so clinical the other night, and he looked good. But yeah, like you said, he does get a little, is more prone to a loss as he gets a little bit further on. But then I feel like once he's had 2, 3, 4 matches, he's got that match tightness again, and he, you know, he feels good. I'm more concerned when he obviously plays against Novak and Roger. That's when he looks a little bit more fallible. But with Roger, I don't know. It's one of those tough ones. Like, you know, we do have to come. Since, like, he's 38 years old, for God's sake, and the level that he is still playing at. And we have to bear in mind that the guys he's playing at, they're not bunnies. They're playing in a Grand Slam. Yeah. So they, you know, they can play lights out tennis for one set. And if he's just not on it, it's one set. But then good luck to anyone trying to do that, like, 3 sets against him. Yeah. And, you know, I think he admitted in press that the guy played well in that first set and he just wasn't quite feeling it. It was a little bit rusty. And then once he got his groove and got back into it, you know, his class showed. And I think that's a problem with these guys. They know how to navigate these tough situations. And, you know, if they do lose that first set, there's no panic. Whereas, you know, someone maybe like a Zverev, a Thiem or something, they're kind of like, oh my God, I'm the favourite here. This is where their mentality's maybe a little bit different. They haven't quite got that champion's mentality just yet. And I guess that comes with years and years of winning the biggest titles that they don't really have under their belts.
And years and years of titles, years and years of first round exits for Brits at Slams. And unfortunately, you know, we're down to 2 out of 5. Harriet Dart's match was against a fellow qualifier, but she just, against somebody that's got a lot more experience than her, and I think it showed. But I think it was a great run for Harriet to get into the main draw.
I think if we look at her year so far, how she's done at the Slams, I think she's got to be incredibly proud of what she's done. And I think this is a big stepping stone year for her, and she's going to take a lot of confidence from obviously what she's done qualifying in Australia and then qualifying here, doing well at Wimbledon as well. So I think, you know, she's really got to look at the positives. And obviously the match on Monday probably wasn't quite how she'd wanted it to go, and there are probably things that she could have done better. But at the same time, she's making steady progress, and that's kind of what I think she'll be happy with. And, you know, hopefully she can take a little bit of form into the rest of this year and really start next year strong, because, you know, she's been performing well, and she's shown on the big stage that she can handle the pressure. And it's just getting that experience, I think, a little bit that she's lacking on the big stage. And that just is just going to come with matches and on these occasions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at, she did really well in Australia and then just got thumped by her idol, no less, Maria Sharapova. This was a far better, tighter match. Just unlucky, I think, that Bogdan is a little bit more consistent in general. On to the rest of the Brits that went out, and we'll give Joe and Dan their due. 2 5-setters, 2, I think, very different sort of matches, same outcome. I saw Norries as a real heartbreaker. You know, he did so well to come back, and to lose in that tiebreak was just desperately sad. Whereas Edmund just capitulated at the end. He had a break in that decider, then just lost 3 games in a row. What is wrong, you know, what's going wrong with Carl? Let's start with him first.
Again, he'd probably employ me as his coach if I knew the answer to that. But I think it just all comes down to, I think for him, it's a lot down to fitness and being able to have that kind of the training block behind him, the lack of matches as well that he's played. And obviously the kind of form and the losses that he's had have been quite close. And I think those kind of maybe have scarred him a little bit. And as soon as he gets to those close occasions, he kind of goes into a shell a little bit more. Whereas, you know, when he's free flowing, he's very extravagant, unleashes that forehand, big serve, he's going to hit over the backhand. But it just doesn't seem like he's quite like that. As soon as he gets a break, you know, he kind of goes into a shell a little bit. He's not as expressive as he was when he was feeling confident and going for his shots as much. And that's kind of the frustrating thing, in a sense, is that he's not going to win matches by doing that. At some point, he's going to have to say to himself, well, I'd rather lose playing more expansive tennis that's actually going to get me somewhere if I can keep doing it. Whereas if he keeps kind of going into a shell, it's just going to end up being a vicious cycle, I think, because these guys at Grand Slams are not going to give it to you. You're going to have to go and work for it. And and him playing passive is just, it's just not going to cut it.
And that's what's surprising me, is that I never really put him as a particularly passive. He's not the most demonstrative person, right, I give you that. But on the court, he's a very different person to who you see in press afterwards. And we have seen him pump himself up and, you know, but he always does look very awkward. He looks like somebody sort of like pumping himself out of school disco. It's just not quite, it's not quite Nick Kyrgios. But then, you know, we know he can do it. He did it in Australia last year. You know, we know he can pull together those results. It's just, I think he needs some stability in his coaching. And I spotted Colin Beecher in his. In fact, I haven't seen Mark Hilton with him, so I wonder whether there's a slight change there. And it probably takes time to get to grips to a new coach. So, and Norrie, I think this was the best I've seen him play on the hard courts this summer. And, you know, great fight for him to come back. But his tie breaks were just abysmal. you know, both of them were quite one-sided. I felt desperately sad for Norrie. I thought that this was a winnable. I thought he actually had the best draw of the lot. But it just shows that a qualifier coming in has an awful lot more confidence.
Yeah, they're massively so. It's, you know, getting used to the conditions and the balls and the courts and everything like that. It is something that's kind of maybe underestimated a little bit. You just sort of think, you're playing a qualifier, it's fine. They're lower ranked, but it is very rarely the case that it is like that. And, you know, the guy was feeling confident, playing well. And, you know, Norrie did well to come back. But like you said, he just played poor tie breaks. And I think that's probably the thing he'll be most frustrated with, because he did so well to come back. And it was just a shame that he just couldn't quite get it going in those tie breaks. And I think he'll look back on it with a little bit of regret.
So we do have two Brits in the singles. First up will be Jo Konta, when the rain stops. Her draw's actually eased up a little bit. She did have Marketa Vondrousova in the third round, potentially. She withdrew with a wrist injury. She's got Gasper Ryan next, and then we'll see who she's got. I think maybe if she can get past Gasper Ryan nice and simply in two sets, that might give her a little bit of confidence. But to come through that tough match with Kazakhina surely must be a boost.
Well, yeah, I don't think she's been necessarily playing the best on these hard courts. And like we said last week, I think if she can string a couple of wins together, then, you know, she's a whole different kettle of fish. And I think she's one of the really dangerous ones in the draw, outside of sort of the top sort of 5-6 seeds. But it's just a case of trying to get through those first couple of matches. But Gasparian's not going to be a walk in the park. You know, we saw how well she played against Svitolina at Wimbledon. So I wouldn't say this is going to be an easy match for sure for Jo. But if she can kind of show that fighting spirit that she did against Kazakhina, then, you know, Gasparian's going to have to play well to get past her. But I think knowing Jo and knowing her mentality, she's just going to take it one match at a time and just focus on every single point and what she has to do. And I think that's going to stand her in good stead.
And let's finish with Dan Evans. He came through a tough match as well. He seemed to be channeling his inner Andy Murray, with lots of monologuing, lots of gesticulating and yelling. I've got to be honest, I do not know how he didn't pick up either code violations for coaching and for language. Because there was all of that going on, and this was when he was winning. Has he suddenly started to put pressure on himself? You know, the cheeky chappy who doesn't seem to sort of bother that much seems to really get things on, you know, on his back when he's playing now, which we never really saw before.
Maybe it has something to do with Felge not being in his corner. I don't know. I didn't see who was in his box this time.
Leon was there.
Was it Leon?
And yeah, I think and I don't know who else.
I mean, it could play a little bit of a part, or it could just be that, you know, he's probably one of the most competitive people that I know, and he hates losing. So, and I think he's a bit of a perfectionist. I heard he said after the match, he was just like, well, that was not a match for the crowd to watch. It wasn't very good, and all of this stuff. And he was just brutally honest and was just like, it wasn't great. I just somehow managed to win. My serve wasn't great. My forehand, I think, wasn't great. So, you know, I think he's going to be one of those who is happy to win, just get through the match. But, you know, he's one of those guys who wants to play well and wants to show off and show what he can do. And it probably just was a little bit of frustration and putting pressure on himself. You know, I think he's made a third round a couple of times in the two previous occasions he's played. So you know, he has shown that he can play well on these courts. So I think he'll have high expectations of himself and would want to reach at least third round and maybe even more. So I wouldn't see it as necessarily a bad thing that he's kind of gesticulating and getting frustrated with himself. It's kind of pretty much any tennis player would do that. There's very few, you know, Roger Federer is probably the only one who is able to keep those emotions under check. And if he's playing terribly, you know, you still won't see it maybe a little bit. But I think for the most part, you know, tennis players, we have to let our emotions out somehow.
So he's got Luca Pui, who hasn't been in the best of form. I think if he can drag this out to 4 or 5 sets, I think the longer it goes on, the better his chances.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's got a good chance. I don't think people enjoy the way he plays because he obviously can mix up with that slice backhand. You know, he'll happily go in there and not miss and then, you know, try and come forward. He's got that variation. And I think Pui's a little bit one-dimensional, potentially.
So pretty with it.
Yeah, yeah, very true. But I think it's something that Dan's going to be able to use to his advantage. And that slice backhand, I think, will be key. And I think just being able to mix up a little bit, which Pui can't do quite. He maybe is a bigger ball striker, but I think that variation could be crucial. And if he can maybe just play a little bit better than he did in that first round, I have high hopes. I don't have any expectations. I just have high hopes that we could sneak a Brit into that third round.
So do we think that when we regather here next week, we're going to have the two Brits in the draw? So that will that take us to quarterfinals?
Hand on heart, I'd be shocked if Dan made the quarterfinals. I think there's potential for Jo. I do think so. You know, she's shown in the past that she has the potential to make slam semifinals and she knows what it takes. So I think if she can get on a roll, I'm not putting any expectation on her at all, but I see there's more potential there for her to potentially get there.
And let's finish up with who do we see? I know you love predictions. Who do we see for this time next week? Big three on the men still happily ticking along?
Yeah, I don't think there'll be any shocks with those guys. I'd be very, very surprised if they weren't still in the draw. Just don't see anyone getting past them.
And on the women's side?
God, ask me another question.
Okay, well, let's try and narrow it down. Do we see Osaka making it? Will we be talking about Osaka next week?
I'm hoping so.
Okay, Barty?
I don't know. I just have this weird feeling about Barty. I think she either could go and win the whole tournament or just lose the next round. I just don't know. I'm not...
I wasn't convinced after that first round.
No, she's not filling me with confidence. Like, over the last couple of weeks, she hasn't filled me with complete confidence. But then again, she's so cool, calm and collected that, again, she could just easily turn it around and kind of switch the form on. And so, again, she's one of those that either way wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, if we stay with those top four seeds, Pliskova had a bit of a scare as well. You know, do we think we'll be... And she's still doing even though she had a scare, we're still doing a under the radar bit. She's in action today. And Halep, how do we think that... Do we think we'll be talking about them next week?
I think... Pliskova, yes. Halep, no.
Really?
Yeah, but I mean, let's be honest, I'm probably going to get that wrong. So... I wouldn't say that I've got too much clout when it comes to predictions. I think Serena will still be there, and I think she'll be the one to beat.
Okay, well, let's see how we get on next week. As always, thank you so much for joining me.
It's been an absolute pleasure.